Welcome to the Uncommon Career Podcast. I'm your host, Patricia Ortega. I'm a counselor-turned-coach bringing you faith-based resources, insights, and strategies to help you live that walk-on-water adventure God called you to. Find more information at theuncommoncareer.com. Hey friends, welcome back. So I've been reading this book. It's called The Body Keeps a Score. And if you are anywhere near or close to a counselor or a therapist, or you've had some trauma in your life, you probably have had this book recommended to you before. And so people keep recommending it to me because if you've heard my story, you know there's, you know, some trauma and abuse and whatnot. I'm starting to talk to this counselor and she's like, hey, you should read the book, The Body Keeps a Score. And I'm like, for goodness sakes, stop telling me that. So finally I pick it up and I'm starting to read it. And oh my goodness, it is so good. So there are some pieces from that book that I want to share with you, mainly because the numbers are staggering. You know, I grew up thinking like, oh, woe is me. It's just me who's going through all this, you know, horrible stuff. But the reality is that a lot of people, like if you've got a circle of friends with as little as three people in it, chances are possibly two of you have gone through some sort of trauma, whether big or small. And not only that, if you're in a bigger group, like a group of 10 people, chances are you've got a lot more folks in the room who have gone through that same trauma, whether it be, you know, violence, whether it be emotional, spiritual, or other kinds of physical abuse, addiction, and everything that comes with that. And so today, I thought I would share some thoughts from the first two chapters because A, that's as far as I got, and because B, there's just a lot of great information about how that type of experience influences the way that you think, and, you know, it trickles into having an impact on your calling, on your purpose, on that thing that God told you to do, and your ability to carry that out. So we're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the numbers within trauma, what exactly trauma includes, how it affects your call, provide different examples. And then I'm going to finish up with some foreshadowing that the author does to talk about some ways to fix these types of issues, to, you know, I guess, face them head on and decide what you want to do about them. Okay, so the very first thing is I'm going to read this quote here because I don't want to butcher it and because it's a really good sentence. But basically, it just shares with us the number of trauma victims that there actually are amongst us in society. So it says here, let's see, one in five Americans was sexually molested as a child. One in four was beaten by a parent to the point of a mark being left on their body. One in three, so if you have three friends, one of those couples, I'm assuming three married friends, one of those couples is going to engage in physical violence. A quarter of us, so that's one in four of us, grew up with alcoholic relatives, and one out of eight witnessed their mother being beaten or hit. So you can see that the numbers are staggering. I mean, no matter what group you're in, chances are someone in that group or multiple someones in that group, and maybe that's you in most groups, that's me. I'm one of those multiple people in that group that went through that. And so I thought this would be kind of an important little tidbit to share with you. Okay, so as far as trauma, it kind of already went over those pieces, but essentially it includes the impact of violence and the impact of abuse, whether it be physical, spiritual, mental, you know, visual things that you've seen, violence that you've seen or that was aggressed towards you, all of that kind of stuff. And so interestingly enough, when I'm doing the coaching, I notice that more often than not, there is some impact from prior experiences into the entire career process and myself going through the business aspect. And I'm actually helping a couple of folks go through their sort of business development process. There's situations that come up there as well. So first, I'm going to talk to you about some examples of the impact of trauma, which I found very interesting. The first example is that people who have been impacted by trauma, and remember, this can be like really dramatic stuff like PTSD that results from, you know, being a war veteran, but it could also be much more, you know, what you might consider day to day or less, less dramatic. Maybe that's not the right word, but Anyway, so these are just examples of impact of those traumatic type of experiences. And the first one that came up is a sensitivity to threat and a sort of like this constant, let me see, where is it? I'm going to find it for you. Here we go. So the first thing is a sensitivity to threat and a vigilance for that threat. So basically, even though there isn't a threat present, even though someone's not actually going to hit you, or even though someone is not actually going to verbally abuse you or put you down in negative, obviously negative ways, that threat is still there. So you basically walk through life believing that something bad is about to happen. Now imagine how that impacts your day-to-day, how it impacts your, you know, it says here, it impacts your creativity, it impacts your imagination. So everything that you think you're able to do, you're kind of stunted in the type of vision you can cast. And it says in the word, where there is no vision, the people perish. So for you not to be able to cast a vision, I feel like these traumatic experiences are just one of the many ways that the enemy comes in and says, hey, here's this bad thing, this sinful thing that happened to you. And it is sinful to have any kind of trauma, because we're supposed to love your neighbor as yourself, whether that's next of kin or not. And that sort of sums up the law. That's what it says in the gospel. That's what Jesus says. And so, yes, every single form of trauma in one way, shape, or form has its root at sin. And so to me, that trauma is the enemy's way of saying, hey, let's put this negative situation and let's use this negative situation to put a life message into you that's going to stop you later on from being able to clearly see, envision, imagine, implement, create basically the purpose that you were set on this earth for. So I just found that really interesting. I mean, imagine when you go for an interview or you are about to network with someone who is in a high position or who's able to help you, there may not really be a threat there. But because we have this vigilance and sensitivity for threat, we may envision a threat that's not really there. We may assume something because in our minds, we're sort of recreating that trauma. And it's crazy because I never really think, oh, my trauma is impacting me right now and it's making me not want to go to this interview. Like, I never think about that. I'm sure you probably don't either. But that like little bit of worry, little bit of anxiety that sits there, sometimes it's a healthy level of worry, a healthy level of nerves. But you know, as much as I know, that there are moments, especially if you've gone through some of those traumatic experiences as a child or even later on in life, you know the feeling of, okay, I'm making a bigger deal out of this than I think it really is, or my reaction is stronger, my body's literally reacting and I'm not quite sure why. And so that has to do with that chronic vigilance and sensitivity to threat. Now, another thing that the book mentioned that I thought was just so interesting, and again, just so I don't miss it, this is The Body Keeps the Score, and it is by, oh, I'm going to mess this up, folks, Bessel van der Kolk. So this was one of the interesting pieces. But the next piece I noticed, going on with the examples of how traumatic experiences, even if it's just one traumatic experience, like a car accident or witnessing someone get shot, right? Like, there's always something that sticks with us. And it literally, the book literally talked about that one moment in time could shift everything about how you perceive the world. It actually mentioned an example of us reliving our response, our bodily and physiological, but also psychological response. But we're reliving those responses to seemingly unrelated experiences. So for example, you know, if you were verbally abused as a child or later in life, you might then find yourself in an argument with a colleague, and you might automatically have, before that argument even started, you may have thought something like, oh, that colleague doesn't like me. Oh, they're out to get me. Or you might feel like you're a victim, like you're being manipulated or you're being taken advantage of. And some of that might be from that situation, but you know, it's important, and I'm learning too, that it's important to pay attention to figure out if your response and the level of your response is in alignment with the level of the aggression that was taken towards you in that moment. So for example, if you're at the office and a colleague, you know, says something to you and it's a comment and it could be taken negatively, but it could also just be a random comment, right? If you or I, either one of us, right? If in this situation we go and we get really upset and we start thinking like, what the heck is this person saying? And we're like, you know, maybe talking back, starting an argument, maybe even getting into a fight, all of that stuff, right? That might mean that, hey, you're actually not responding to your colleague. Even if you don't respond to them physically, even if you just get like really upset and you're carrying it and you're driving home with it and it's like stirring, you know what I'm talking about. You know what I'm talking about when you're like getting really upset. But if you really thought about the exact words that came out of their mouth, you're wondering like, why am I reacting so harshly? That's what I'm talking about. So now I'm constantly asking myself, like, is what I'm thinking true? Is a story in my head true, or is it really only in my head? And I have to remember that there's a story going on in my head. So when I have a negative interaction, I always have to tell myself, okay, this is a story that I'm telling myself. Or, you know, the story I'm telling myself is, and then kind of talk that out, and then go back to the statement that was said to me or the situation that occurred, and then figure out if I'm reacting to the story or if I'm reacting to what actually happened. Now, even worse than the experiences that originally planted the message is this constant threat that at any point in time, what happened to you previously or that threat that came to fruition earlier in your life may come to fruition again. Now, that's worse because now it's like whether it's spiritual abuse, verbal abuse, emotional abuse, mental abuse, physical abuse, you know, straight up violence, whatever it might be. Imagine walking through life thinking that's going to happen at any moment. Now, for me, I don't feel like someone's going to hit me at any moment, but I do feel like, okay, this person's going to lash out at me. Oh, I don't want to make this person mad. Like, it's very low level. And I think a lot of us have those. I've had so many conversations with women, with men, just in general. So many of us have these. We have this message, this idea in our head that something awful is going to happen if we put ourselves out there. That could be in relationships, but it could also be in our career. It could be looking for a new job, asking for a reference or asking for a favor. We have this like, I don't know, this like hesitation, like something horrible is going to happen if I put myself out there. I'm going to be severely rejected or someone's going to tell my boss that I'm trying to apply. So I don't know. There's always something, right? And so I find that really interesting that, you know, the author, Bessel van der Kolk, mentioned again that worse than the actual experience itself is the message and the constant threat. Meaning that your body is going to constantly be feeling like it has to defend itself against this threat. And this is where some of those like behavioral reactions come and some of those relational patterns come in that can get in the way of things like our calling and our purpose. It's like along with everything, generally speaking, because the book mentioned how it, you know, and I think I talked about it earlier, how you know, these past negative experiences, these past traumatic experiences, to whatever extent you experience them, they mess with the way you perceive the world, with your imagination, your ability to envision, to create, right? Because you're just envisioning that negative thing that happened to you and it kind of takes over in your mind. And the crazy thing is that along with all of that, it really means that it's hard to ever see any possibilities besides what you're currently in. It's hard to see a possible life outside of the box that you've already put yourself into. And all you see are red flags if you were to step outside of that box. Now I'm realizing, whoa, this box is a horrible place to be and we need to get out of it. And I've had some coaching conversations where I did not say anything about a box and the person I was coaching was like, oh my goodness, I had this breakthrough. I had this like revelation, this realization through our call. And her response to her revelation was, I feel like I've been in this cage my whole life. I feel like the cage is open and I'm not quite sure how to get out. Like, I can't believe I've been living in this cage. And it wasn't box, but cage and box, come on now, like that's the same thing. But I just find it so interesting that our mind and our prior experiences can literally put us in that box. And because of all of this, you really can't do anything that involves a risk. Because anything that involves a risk is, guess what? It's a threat. But doesn't that include everything that requires faith? Because faith is the evidence of what you can't see. So faith, by nature, involves risk. And so to me, it's like, okay, well, this is no surprise. I mean, it's very interesting, but it's once you get into it, it's no surprise that these situations that happen in your past, these negative circumstances, can be impacting you to the point where you're not able to see and get out of the box and see what could happen if you took a risk, because we are busy as a society because of so much, you know, what is it? Chances are, one in every two people probably at this point have gone through some sort of trauma, whether big or small, whether for one time or a long period of time. But imagine that so many of us are risk averse. Just look at the society around you. How many people are working jobs they do not like? They have the ability to go for a different job. They have the ability to step out and start a business. They have the ability to change their environment, but they don't. Why don't they do that? Here's one reason that I think was so interesting and totally mind-blowing. So the author was sharing, I'm not going to try to pronounce his name again, but the author was sharing how there was this experiment that was done on dogs. And there were dogs that they shocked with an electric shock. Now, this was a long time ago, but regardless, these dogs were shocked and it was painful, but they did not allow them out. And so they had a group of dogs that it's called learn helplessness. They had a group of dogs that weren't able to leave the cage and just kind of had to experience this pain. And they learned to not fight back or not try to escape the pain. Okay. Well, they had this other group of dogs that they allowed to escape the pain. They were dogs who were never shocked. So one group of dogs was shocked and couldn't escape it. And the other group of dogs had never been shocked. Well, then what they did is they shocked both groups of dogs in an open cage. And the dogs who had never been shocked, the dogs who did not have this learned helplessness, they ran away from the shock. But the dogs who were caged and could not move when they originally were shocked, they had this learned helplessness. And even though the cage was open, even though they had the ability to run away and no longer experience the painful shock, the dogs stayed there. This boggles my mind because it made me think, you know what? We do the same thing. It was like the person I was coaching, and it was like how I've done it too, where it's like you just stay in the situation that is in some ways painful, right? Staying at a job that you hate, or, you know, denying this call in your life that you know you're supposed to do this. You know you're supposed to start an online store, or you know you want to begin a ministry, or you know you're supposed to, you know, take this trip around the world because God's asking you to, I don't know, move forward in something He's been speaking to you about for years. If there's something in you that you feel like I'm supposed to do this, but it's to the point where it's like painful that you're not doing it, consider like, why aren't you doing it? If you talk about it to your friends all the time, why aren't you moving forward in it? I just find this so incredibly interesting. And I think it applies not only to people who have had intense trauma, I'm telling you, I think it applies to different people at different levels of negative experiences. And I have yet to meet a person who hasn't had a life-impacting, maybe life-altering negative experience, even if it's not trauma. We all get hurt in one way, shape, or form. So what I find now is the question, right? The question of, okay, how exactly are we supposed to be motivated towards that God calling or that God nudge if it involves the risk? Because all things that are faith-based involve some sort of a risk, right? That it's just by nature of what faith is. How are we supposed to be motivated towards that if all we see are the things that we could be doing wrong? All we see are the ways that we could fail or how situations might completely go awry. We're constantly in this mode of, let me protect myself. Let me protect my identity. Let me protect my reputation. Let me protect my pride, my ego. Like, I'm the first one to say, man, I am an incredibly prideful person. You wouldn't think so, right? Like, I'm not this like beautiful model. Like, no, not by a very long shot. But it doesn't stop me from thinking about myself and my image. And I know that this impacts a lot of folks too. So I just find that really interesting. Like, how exactly are we supposed to be motivated towards this high calling that God has put on each of our lives? Both the, you know, the calling to be, you know, saved by faith through grace with our belief in Jesus Christ and to share the gospel with others, but also in the calling that's subordinate to that, also in the calling of, you know, what each of our unique individual gifts were created for and what we're supposed to carry out. The only thing that comes to mind immediately, to my mind, outside of what is in the book that I'm reading, The Body Keeps the Score, is that verse in Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. That says, finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent or praiseworthy, think about such things. It's sort of saying, hey, what you consume is what's going to change. Kind of what goes in is going to change what comes out, right? And the other scripture is 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 5. And to me, this is like another anecdote sort of to this idea that we're constantly going to be thinking of negative things. And 2 Corinthians chapter 10, verse 5 says, we demolish arguments and every pretension that sets itself or every thought that sets itself up against the knowledge of God. And we take captive every thought and make it obedient to Christ. And so it might sound like, okay, great. I'm not exactly sure what that means. Well, that means anytime you have a negative thought that tells you are not worthy to take that next step or you are not worthy to walk in your calling or to walk in freedom, if someone or something in your mind, a message tells you are not good enough to walk in what the Lord God has called you into, then you are to take that thought and you have to take it captive and make it obedient to Christ. And what does it mean to make it obedient to Christ? To set it up against the knowledge of God. Well, the knowledge of God is the word. And so if your thought says something like, hey, I'm not worthy of XYZ, whatever it is, if you think, hey, I'm not worthy of that position, chances are that's not the only thing you think. It goes in deeper and there's a root that says, hey, I'm not a worthy person. So you want to figure out, okay, what's the root of this message that I have in my head? And then take that and go to the word and say, okay, great. That's the thought in my head. But what does God say about this? And God says you are cherished. God says you are a light. God says you are a city on a hill. God says you are not forsaken. So all of these verses are going to basically counteract this thought that you've had. And, you know, in the word, I believe it's Isaiah 55:11. Yeah, here it is. It's Isaiah 55:11 that says, so is my word that comes out from my mouth. It will not return to me empty, but it will accomplish what I desire and achieve the purpose for which I sent it. God's telling you right here, right now, in Isaiah 55:11, he's saying, hey, my word is alive. I sent it to remind you of the truth. And so when you think you are not worthy, when you think you are not good enough, when you think something horrible is going to happen, remember that I'm the one who takes care of you, but you've got to get into my word. You've got to let that word get into your heart. And it says, so is my word that comes out from my mouth. It will not return to me empty. It will accomplish what I desire and achieve the purpose for which I sent. So guess what? I've experienced it in ways I can't even begin to tell you on this podcast. It would take hours. But when I take what I'm thinking and I write it down, and it's a painful moment to acknowledge what you're thinking, but it's so necessary. Even, you know, Dr. Bessel van der Kolk, I'm getting so much better at saying that. Even the author of the textbook, who is a psychiatrist, by the way, said that in so many words, I'm definitely paraphrasing, that the solution is acknowledging your feelings. He says something to the effect of, this can never get better without knowing what you know and feeling what you feel. You have to face your feelings. You have to face what happened. And so sometimes that involves journaling. And of course, please do reach out to a counselor if you've gone through some traumatic experiences and you need to process in a safe space with someone who can help you kind of, you know, let out the can of worms, but then also bring it everything back together. So please do reach out if you need to a counselor. But you need to know what you know. You need to understand, hey, this thought, and you're sort of objectifying it. This is one thing that helped me a lot, is over the years, I've objectified my experience a lot. I would share my story and be like, this is something that happened to me. And I would just look at it from all different angles and be like, this is how it affected me. This is what I thought about it. But now I think this. Like, just looking at the situation almost from a third person perspective so that I understood how that experience made me think what I think in this moment. And then I would write down like feelings. And you've got to face that too. You've got to really feel the anger or feel the sorrow. You know, there's a moment where I was like, hey, I really need to mourn. I need to mourn the side of myself that believed that I was unworthy of love, period. Not love from a husband, not love from a mother, just love. I just felt like I was unworthy of love. But in order for me to move past that, I had to sit down, and I shared this. I was talking to a mentor, and I had to sit down with them and say, I feel unworthy of love in any capacity. But I had to face that in order to move on from it. And I had to face what the root of that was. So I just found that so interesting. So that was one of the, the foreshadowing of the solution. Because of course, the entire book goes into very detailed solutions. I am sure of it. But seeing as how I'm on chapter two, we'll get that in a future episode. So some things you can do if you've gone through some negative experiences and you know that they're impacting you is to, you know, articulate what happened, know what you know, and feel what you feel. And again, please do reach out to a counselor if, you know, there is any chance that you're going to need that support. And a lot of us do. I actually started talking to a counselor not too long ago, and gosh, it's so liberating to feel that you can just let go and just be like, oh, this happened to me, you know? And I say it in like a funny voice because I'm like Chandler from Friends. Like, when it's awkward, I just joke around, and some people think I'm really funny, and I'm like, you think I'm really funny, but the reality is that I feel really awkward, and that's why I'm so funny. But anyways, it's not a laughing matter for a lot of people, so please don't think that I'm like, you know, like making fun of it in any way, shape, or form. But I was totally like crying to my counselor and being like, this happened, and blah, blah, blah. But it was so freeing to know that she was there to help me, like, not just wallow in my own, like, oh, boohoo, this happened to me, but like to really see the strength in that, to really see like why we're talking about it, why we're going back to that place. Super helpful. So check out counseling, really, really effective. Wrapping this up now, because I don't want to hold you up too much. The other thing that was mentioned in the textbook, concept that would be helpful is that for the learned helplessness, like the case where the dogs were literally not leaving their cage, they were not escaping the painful electric shock because it felt like home to them, because that's the only thing they knew, and they just learned to be helpless and not move. The way that the doctors or experimenters, I don't know, the researchers were able to get the dogs to eventually voluntarily leave the painful situation and step out into a better situation, into a situation in which they're no longer being shocked, is by repeatedly, they had to, I mean, it's not as dramatic for us, I hope, but they literally had to shock the dogs. And then while they were shocking him, like drag them out of the cage so that the dogs could experience how to get out of the pain, number one, and number two, what it felt like to not experience pain. Imagine that you're constantly going through this anxious situation, whether it's networking, whether it's considering whether or not to apply for a position, whether it's agonizing over the interview or whatever it might be, over taking a leap of faith that God has called you to, whatever it might be. Imagine agonizing and crying over it and getting just all bent out of shape and becoming irritable and not knowing what to do and living in that ambiguity. And then someone drags you out of it to where you feel the freedom of being able to make a decision with a clear head. I don't know about you, but I've had those moments, tiny glimpses of those moments, right? And when you have those glimpses of those moments in the middle of a tough situation, it kind of feels like, I didn't know this was possible. And a whole other world opens up to you, a world in which you're free, a world in which you don't feel a ton of anxiety, a world in which you can just move, you can just decide, you can just live out your life. I just thought that was such a great, that research project with the dogs and electric shock, although I'm sad that the dogs had to get shocked, right? Like, that's not cool. But I think it teaches us something so important about ourselves. And that's that you have to step out. You can be scared of what's going to happen on the other side. That's okay. Because courage, and everybody knows this quote, except for me, because I'm not going to say it well. I'm going to butcher it right now. But courage isn't the absence of fear. I think it is. Courage is being able to move in spite of fear. I hope I said that right. Call me on it if I didn't. But that's the thing. You've got to step out because unlike the dogs in that experiment, there isn't always someone to drag us out. Now, of course, if you've got a coach, then hey, we can do that for you. But generally speaking, most of us, we don't have a researcher there to drag us out of our pain when we are, in a sense, comfortable in that space. But you've got to step out. There's no way you can grow courage without stepping out, even little by little, in safe spaces. If you are having trouble with, social interactions, or if you're having trouble with making a big decision, take a baby step in that social interaction or a baby step in that big decision. Test the waters. And at first, you'll have the ability to experience just a tiny little bit of that feeling. And that's okay. Then do it again. Go a little further. And soon what you'll be doing is you'll be retraining yourself to understand what it feels like to live free and to understand what it feels like to not have that painful experience every time you think about making a move in any one direction. And these small steps could be as easy as speaking up at a meeting when you normally would be so scared to do so. It might mean that you make your first networking request where you ask someone, hey, I'm just wondering if I can have a few minutes of your time. I just wanted to ask you a couple of questions about how you got to where you are. And, maybe you can just provide me with some insight on how I might do the same thing. That might sound really scary for some people. I've talked to multiple folks who networking is just not something that, comes easy. It could also be finally applying to that position or to that company that you've dreamt up for so long. And you just felt like, people like me don't get jobs like that. What if you just apply? And who cares if you don't get it? The point is you applied, you made progress. Or finally, what if the small step you take is to tell someone that you want to open a business? I'm not saying you have to go and get your LLC and open a business and get your website. No, baby steps. Just tell someone, hey, I've had this vision and this dream to open up a business. Take baby steps. Step out. Experience freedom, even if it's in small doses. Now, there's some other foreshadowing that Dr. Vanderkolk makes in regards to solutions, and we may or may not get into it here on this podcast. It depends on, you know, how much it relates to, you know, to your needs as someone who might be changing careers or, you know, looking for a promotion, or maybe you want to start a business or go on a new adventure, whatever it is that relates to your calling. If there is content in the book, then we'll go ahead and do another episode and just continue talking through the book. But otherwise, some of the fixes or the solutions that he foreshadows are talk, which means the counseling, the talk therapy, and all of that. He does mention medication, especially if the trauma has impacted you to a level that you need that medication to sort of think clearly, to calm yourself. But he actually has a few vivid warnings about how the pharmaceutical industry has come up and sort of usurped the importance of talk therapy and the body component that I'll tell you about in a minute. So, you know, if you're going to go the medication route, please do talk to a psychiatrist and see what options you have prior to going straight to medication, because oftentimes the, you know, therapy component and the talk therapy component and the body component, I'll tell you in a second, sometimes those are more than sufficient to help you process the situations that you've been through. The body portion that I mentioned, it talks about how when you go through trauma, it changes your physiology. So it changes. So every time you're anxious, for example, or every time you experience that constant threat that we were talking about, and your body goes into fight or flight method, even though you don't actually, you know, run or fight someone, like you feel it in your body. There's just that like adrenaline kind of. I thought I was just high energy, but apparently that's adrenaline. Your body, that's stress in your body, and it's actually can be damaging to your body in the long term. So one of the fixes is to help your body, your physiological processes, sort of calm down and get to a place of safety, and then your mind will follow. So it's kind of like the cyclical piece. Anyhow, the other portion, solution or part of the solution that was mentioned included community, which no surprise there. The Bible says, you know, where I think it's where two or three come together. Oh, shoot. Here we go. So the Bible tells us that though one may be overpowered, two can defend themselves, and a cord of three strands is not quickly broken. That's what I was trying to say. So basically, community and being in community is extremely helpful to, I guess, negate the impact of these negative situations. In fact, our author, Dr. Vanderkolk, he says that the brain disease model, which is the model that, you know, medication is aimed towards, it overlooks a fundamental truth. It actually overlooks four fundamental truths, but the one related here is it overlooks the fundamental truth that our capacity to destroy one another is matched by our capacity to heal one another, and that restoring relationships and community is central to restoring our own well-being. And that's, you know, body and mind. So community is extremely important. So another step you can take is join a Bible study group, join a home group, join a group where you can say, okay, I'm going to show up every single week without fault, and I'm going to be a part of this community. And at first, it might feel like a chore. I've been in there. I've been in that situation where I'm like, oh, I got to wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning and go to this meeting because I committed to it, blah, blah, blah. But I promise you, as you start building relationships, it's such a great place to slowly open up, to slowly take those small steps of courage, especially social courage that we were talking about earlier. And that also, in that same community, you have the opportunity to relive and retrain yourself through positive experiences. So it's just all around a good opportunity. So you certainly can read more about this. You can start seeing a counselor, pick up the book, The Body Keeps the Score. And remember that no matter what, the good Lord is walking with you. He's walking alongside you every step of the way. So seek him first, and he will take care of everything else. Surrender your heart to him, and he will guide you in every single direction you need to go for the rest of your life. Whether it be, hey, what do I need to do to process this trauma? Or how can I start taking baby steps towards the calling you have on my life? Or how can I maybe build courage over time? Whatever question you have, his word, and the fact that his word is divinely inspired and that the Holy Spirit can speak to you through his word, that's all that you need as your starting point. And then let him guide you to every other solution for every other problem in life. Listen, friend, we've been together for nearly 45 minutes, if you can believe it. Hopefully you've been A-okay listening to me just talk and talk and talk and talk. But our time has come to an end now, and I am so happy to have spent this 3/4 of an hour with you. Just know again that I love you. I'm praying for you, and I'll see you on the next one. Hey friend, thanks for listening. You're now done with the first step towards becoming a part of the Uncommon Career Community, and that is to listen to this podcast. So, woohoo, congratulations. Your next step is to head over to theuncommoncareer.com and request my 5-step strategy to literally change your mindset by systematically busting through all those mental messages. I'm talking about those lifelong lies that make so many Christians like you and I completely ineffective in our calling. I used this when insecurity and negative mindsets were really getting me down and stopping me from taking that leap of faith I knew God was calling me to. This works so well for me every single time, and I know it's going to work for you too. So again, before you forget, head over to theuncommoncareer.com, grab your 5-step strategy, and I'll see you there.